Hello, listeners. Jordan here. I just want to let you know that you can listen to Nighttime early and ad-free on Amazon Music, included with Prime.
You are listening to Keep Canada Weird, a weekly weird news roundup by the Nighttime Podcast.
Hello, listeners, and welcome back to my weekly Keep Canada Weird discussion series. If you're new here in Keep Canada Weird, my pal handsome Aaron Airport and I seek out and explore some of the more offbeat Canadian news stories from the past week. In tonight's episode, which we recorded during the evening of July 5th, 2022, we discuss some fake toonies, Calgary's hottest sculpture, and 10 Canadian snacks you can't get in the United States. So let's get to it. Handsome Aaron Airport. It's Tuesday, the 5th of July. Mm-hmm. How are you doing?
I am good. How are you?
I'm doing good. What's new in your world? I know you're always a busy guy. You always have things happening. What do you have happening right now?
We're working on a few shows. So, I'm working on a dinner theater that's opening next week at a local theater in Glace Bay. And also working on our Bare Naked Ladies tribute show that we're doing at the Highland Arts Theatre in Sydney on July 29th.
Okay, that's coming up soon. I got to make it for that. I believe I will be able to make it for that.
So, well, yeah. So we're going to cover the whole album front to back. I'm looking forward to it.
For people who are in the area of Cape Breton who want to go see this, how can you get tickets?
They can go to highlandartstheater.com. Mm-hmm. And they can order tickets there. They can call the Highland Arts Theater box office. And it's starting to fill up. So I suggest you, if you're interested and you're in the area of Sydney, Nova Scotia on July 29th, to check it out.
Awesome. Other than that stuff, your professional pursuits, what's been going on? Anything weird or not weird?
No. I just been, it's just work and rehearsals for me right now. Okay. And then this is the only non-rehearsals thing that I've done in the past 2 weeks. Okay.
For me, I've been pressure washing. I don't know if you have a pressure washer. But I'm a bit OCD with like cleaning and stuff. Generally, every year I will pressure wash my deck, which I love to do. But since today, like I started pressure washing my deck this morning. Since I had the pressure washer out and set up, I'm like, I'm gonna pressure wash, you know, my patio chairs. And then that turned into like I'm gonna pressure wash my fence. Mm-hmm. Anyway, my entire yard right now is like, it's like a swamp, but it's really clean at the same time.
Yeah.
But that's what's been up with me. Other than that, I got a story here. Here's a weird Canadian story. So I was walking my youngest child to daycare this 2 or 3 days ago, and he's on my shoulders, and we're talking. I'm walking, and all of a sudden I heard this weird like clicking sound, and then I just saw this little bird like swooped down from the sky, and went like. Just missed my kid's head who was on my shoulder. So I like dodged the bird and my kid was like, whoa, what was that? And then I like looked behind me thinking like that bird like flying through the sky almost hit me for some inexplicable reason. Then I saw the bird turn around and dive back down a second time. Dodged him again and my son is loving it. And I was kind of like trotting a little bit. I took like a couple quick steps because I'm thinking like this little bird's trying to kill us. And then the bird, rather than swooping down, he got on the ground and he was like running towards us, chirping wildly, chasing us. I was kind of freaked out because I can only assume his beak is like a razor, but my son on my shoulders was absolutely loving it.
He probably felt safe being up on your shoulders. Yeah, whereas you're completely exposed to the maniac bird.
Yeah, but anyway, we got away and didn't attack us. What do you think was happening? I'm thinking it was either like we were near its food source, but we were in the parking lot of a mini mall. If it wasn't a food source, maybe it was like eggs or whatever up in a tree. Maybe it's like
maybe That would be my guess, but if you're in a parking lot, I mean, I don't know how. There's so many people that walk around by in a parking lot, so why were you singled out?
Yeah, maybe it was just freaked out to see like
Maybe it was something you
someone.
were wearing. I don't know, like a particular color or a pattern.
Interesting. If any bird psychologists or scientists are out there, maybe they can weigh in. As far as the breed of bird, I don't know. I would say it wasn't a crow or a pigeon. It was a small little thing, kind of like there's a type of bird. I don't know what they are, but they're like the most common bird. But you almost don't even see them because there's so many of them. They're like smaller than a crow, and they're like a dark brown. They're literally everywhere.
Yeah.
Anyway, but it was one of those guys.
Wow. Well, you got out with your life and you should be very thankful.
Yeah, I live to tell about, I live to podcast about it.
Well, especially with the bird flu being so rampant these days, you know.
No, that's monkeypox.
No, the bird flu as well, the amongst the avian community.
Are you a member?
I'm not a bird, no.
Um,
No, but it is going around. The bird flu, they say to be careful not to get too close to birds,
oh,
especially dead ones.
okay. You wouldn't have to tell me that. Actually, you wouldn't have to tell me, but you may have to tell some kids in my neighborhood. I was driving down the sh my street not too long ago, and one of like these little neighborhood kids up the street approached my car, and they were like, "Jordan, look what we found." And she holds her hands like cupping something, and she holds it up to my window, and it was this little like baby bird, all skin and beak, and it was just disturbing looking. And I was immediately disgusted. I've never seen anyone like holding a baby bird like that. The story was she, this little kid who showed me this thing was like a 6-year-old or something, or 7-year-old, and I think what she said was she found it by a tree on her front yard. So the bird must have fallen out of a nest or something. And I wanted nothing to do with it. I told her to go talk to her parents about it, and I drove off.
Oh, wow. You
So
are a helpful neighbor.
I'm not a member of the neighborhood watch.
No, the bird neighborhood bird watch.
You remember Neighborhood Watch from when we were kids?
Oh yeah.
Does that still happen?
Oh yeah, it still does.
Okay. Seems like
Yeah.
it's one of those things from back in the day that is now just like a Facebook group or something. Like,
Well, we had one in our neighborhood growing up, and I remember when they were setting it up and they came to our house to talk to us about it, and we had to put the stickers up and all that stuff.
We had a little, my
But
dad, we
then just
were
start watching.
just watching your neighbors.
It's like you don't have to ask me to watch my neighbor. I already am.
Yeah, well, we had my dad's house. We had like it was like a yellow sign or sticker in our front window. I wonder
It
if
was
it
like a picture of an eye or something. It was like an eyeball.
eyeball with like a house in the foreground, I think. But it would be interesting to go through the history of that group, because I wonder if there are as many instances where somebody took neighborhood watch responsibilities way too far.
Yeah, I would say it happens in probably every single neighborhood watch program that's ever existed. There's always one neighbor that's decked head to toe in camouflage and, has trenches dug in their yard
Doing
and
surveillance.
constantly like night vision goggles and always. It's like the movie The Burbs. Do you ever watch that
I
movie?
love that movie. Early
That's,
Tom Hanks film.
yeah, that's that. I love that movie too. It's one of my favorites. And just how nosy the neighbors are, and they're constantly watching each other's houses all the time and reporting on what's going on.
Well, let's get into it. We got to keep Canada weird. We got a loaded deck tonight, and it isn't about neighborhood watch or birds. What we got to talk about here is a very hot sculpture in Calgary. We're going to talk about fake toonies and the plight of the fake toonie. And we are going to talk about an amazing Canada Day celebration in Vancouver. And then one of the more interesting topics for people who listen to this show from beyond Canada is I found a list of some Canadian snacks you can't get abroad. Specifically, you can't get in the
Yeah.
United States. And that's a
I
cool
found that
topic.
one really interesting. We should save that for the main event.
Yeah, we should. let's start. I let you decide always. So you've just decided that we're going to do the Canadian snacks you can't get abroad last. Yes. But what are we going to do first?
Let's start with the Toonies.
So first of all, for people who are listening from beyond Canada, you may not know that in Canada we have a $1 coin, which we call a loonie. And I think it's called a loonie because it has a picture of a loon.
Of a loon, yeah.
Which is like a kind of water bird. And then we now have a $2 coin that, since we have the loonie for one, we have a toonie, which is the $2 coin. Mm-hmm. And it has kind of a cool design because it's a silver coin, but in the center of the silver coin, there's like a separate gold colored coin embedded in it, I guess is the way I would describe it.
And do you remember, this article brought back memories of, in the late 90s when the Toonie first came out, the first round of Toonies had a default with them where if you tried hard enough, you could pop the center out.
I can remember people being like, oh, the Toonies, it's crazy. The things break if you even, just kind of disappeared.
The bank was offering money to people if they were to bring in defected Toonies. And so, or at least that's what we were told, is that if you bring into the bank Toonies with the center popped out, you know, if the center fell out of your Toonie, you could bring it in and then they would give you like $20 or something.
Really? Because I feel like I could easily, just with a nail and a hammer, I could knock out that center.
Well, that brings me to my next memory, is that people, when they were getting the Toonies in my high school, would just see them outside, just like hitting them with rocks and like trying to knock the center out so that they could bring them into the bank. So I don't know if it was true that the bank would give you money for...
No, why would they?
They wanted to get them off the streets and encourage people to bring them in, was what I was told.
No.
But again, I don't know if it's true or not. But anyway, the rumor was real. The fact that there's enough people who believe that to be true, that in my high school, everybody was beating their Toonies with rocks trying to get the center out.
That's hilarious. Well, let's get to the article, because Toonies are in the news again for a weird reason. It's all about counterfeit coins, which is not something you'd expect from one of our lowest denomination of currency. Is denomination the right word? $2 piece would be like a denomination of Canadian currency. Anyway, let me tell you about this. The RCMP's recent discovery of thousands of counterfeit Toonies has raised concerns about the integrity of Canada's banking system, through which these counterfeit coins circulated with ease. And it also raises an interesting question. Why would anyone counterfeit the lowly Toonie? The answer may well lie in China, where the RCMP allege the camel toe Toonie originated. The camel toe Toonie is named that due to the conspicuous defect, which is a flaw in the polar bear's paw. So on the front of a Toonie, the animal is a polar bear, and the way you can most easily identify the counterfeit Toonie is by looking at one of the paws. It has a camel toe look. Mm-hmm. So let me continue. Dai Zong He, a 68-year-old of Richmond Hill, Ontario, was arrested last month and charged with uttering counterfeit money and possession of counterfeit money. The RCMP say the charges stem from a nearly year-long investigation during which it identified and seized about 10,000 counterfeit Toonies from the Canadian banking system. Mike Marshall, a coin expert in Ontario who has given seminars on identifying counterfeits, said he bought 5 rolls of Toonies in October of 2020 and identified 26 as counterfeit. Each featured the same distinctive flaw. The polar bear's front right paw had a large split toe appearance. Michelle Richardson, a spokesperson for the Royal Canadian Mint, which produces Canada's coins, said the mint detected the fakes last summer through its random sampling. She said it's exceptionally rare to find fake Toonies, but it's not unprecedented. Now, while the comparative quality of counterfeits is in the eye of the beholder, the RCMP said in a statement that the camel toe Toonie are far more convincing than any prior samples. Their weight, for instance, was nearly identical to that of the genuine article, but they nevertheless included notable defects, the most obvious being the polar bear's crude right front paw. This is the first foreign-based counterfeiting ring of Canadian coins that the Mint is aware of, but the coin's putative origin in China doesn't surprise collectors who are accustomed to seeing Chinese-made replicas of rare collectible coins. Mr. Marshall estimated that millions of camel-toe toonies are in circulation, initially found in BC, then Ontario, and now Quebec. And now they're all across the country. And what's more, Mr. Mackey and Mr. Marshall say they've seen entire boxes of toonies straight from the bank that contained not a single genuine coin. Mr. Marshall said police could have started investigating when they were first alerted about the counterfeits in 2020, and the attempts to get public officials and media interests were fruitless. Because it was just coins, nobody reacted. Everybody went, yeah, right, who's going to counterfeit a toonie? And that's exactly why you counterfeit a toonie, because nobody looks. And that's how it ends.
Yeah, yeah.
Kind of an ingenious scheme, I guess. If you can produce them fast enough and efficiently enough, it wouldn't be very hard to get toonies within the, you know, in the market. But how do you take a, like, let's say you have a truckload, you have 500,000 toonies. How do you convert that into any kind of substantial bills? Like, how would you launder that?
I've never produced counterfeit money or worked in any kind of operation that did.
Okay, the only thing I could think of, one option. My first thought was you could go to like casinos and stuff and spend them. Mm-hmm. But that's, I don't know, that's a little weird. I think what would be better is if you knew someone who like ran like, say, a laundromat or some, you ran a business that people pay in coin, and they had a ton, and you know, you just add it, let's say $5,000, $10,000 of fake toonies every month when they're doing their, I don't know, deposits or something. That could be a way to slowly use them in bulk.
Yeah, I guess that could be a way. It seems like a lot of work.
But with a big payoff, if you can get away with it. They say, I think the article that we just went through said they suspect there's like over a million of them. That's mm-hmm. a lot of money. And, you know, if you can have if you can in China, let's say, have someone manufacturing them, and it's only costing, say, 50 cents a piece to manufacture them, and you're making $1.50 on every one. If you can bring a million of them to Canada and get them into our, you know, system, it's mm-hmm. a lot. Someone's going to try to do it if they can get away with it. And it seems like, well, they did arrest this guy, but for the most part.
Yeah, but I don't know. To me, it's so much. There's so many other fruitful illegal activities out there that one can get into. I guess if you're someone who's extremely experienced in the counterfeit money, you know, game, then I don't know.
There's counterfeit everything, and it often comes from, yeah. I don't know why China, but there's like a big market.
Well, I think it's the manufacturing abilities, like, you know, like where you could manufacture whatever.
Yeah.
And have it only be, you know, and just, you wouldn't be seen by anybody.
Mm-hmm. Do you ever go on AliExpress? Do you know what that is?
I've heard about it. Okay. I know people who use it for shopping and
for
stuff.
People who don't know, it's people often say it's the Chinese eBay, and it's you can go on it. I go there often and I buy stuff. The mm-hmm. It's dirt cheap, and it's almost exclusively knockoffs. And the big issue with it, other than the quality and the fact that you're probably supporting somebody who's committing, like, you know, trademark infringement or something, is stuff that gets sent to you takes forever. Like, I'll buy,
yeah, yeah.
Just as an example, let's say there's like a component I need for an electric guitar that I'm making. I can get it in Canada from Amazon or whatever for $45, and it'll show up at my door 3 days later. But I could go on AliExpress, and instead of paying $40, I can get the same, almost the same thing, you know, for $4, but it may take mm-hmm. a month and a half to get to me. But anyway,
in conclusion, I don't know that kind of operation of integrating counterfeit toonies into undetected into the Canadian market seems like a lot of work.
Yeah, you're right. So I'm not gonna suggest anyone does it.
I mean, we could try. And that way, well, at least we'll know.
Yeah, that could be a spin-off. Maybe if we'll do a follow-up episode if we can get the manufacturing down. I don't know anything about melting metals or building molds, but that's probably the first
No.
step.
But I'm sure there's a listener out there who wants to, help us out with this, and maybe they could assume the manufacturing of it, and then we'll be the boots on the ground.
Yeah, this story makes me want to look at my toonies to see if I can find the
The
camel
camel
toe
toe,
hands.
yeah.
Or, yeah, and if anyone finds one on a coin, send me a photo of it. I would like to see among the listeners of Nighttime how quickly someone can be like, "Oh wow, I have a counterfeit toonie." So I'm gonna be checking mine from now on. And I don't know what I would do. Maybe.
I'll look, I guess. I don't handle toonies very often anymore. Like I just don't I rarely ever have change at all.
And if you find, here's another thing, actually. Maybe we shouldn't look at our toonies because if I find one and I know it's counterfeit, I'm not going to want to use it at a store or something. So I think I'd rather not know, and I'm going to let the banks and whoever deals with that stuff
As
figure
far
it
as
out.
I'm concerned, it's not my problem.
But if you,
If
but
I
if you,
have a toonie, I'm going to spend it, whether it's counterfeit or not.
you've been ripped off. Somebody gave you a counterfeit coin, and
Yeah, but I don't know if they gave it to me maliciously. Like,
yeah, but well, either way,
they could
you.
have spent it at a corner store, and then that got passed to somebody, and then
Yeah,
that got passed to
exactly.
me.
But this,
And I'll
whether.
pass it to somebody else. I have no problem with that.
That's the stance you're taking. All right, I would feel bad. I would want to get it
Why would
out
you
of.
feel bad if you got a counterfeit, if you found in your change purse, whatever you keep your change in,
My
and you're
purse,
like,
yeah.
oh, this toonie has a camel toe.
Yeah, I guess
How
it's.
are you really gonna feel?
I'll
Are you gonna
feel.
care at all?
Yeah, I'd be pissed.
Why?
I'd be pissed that it happened, that I got one. But, and mainly I'd be pissed that, not pissed, but I would feel bad about going into a store or paying with what I know is a fake coin. Even though I'm not maliciously doing it and someone didn't give it to me maliciously, I would still be like, ugh. Like, I don't want to give you a fake coin. So.
I would just spend it, I have to be honest.
Okay, yeah. I'm not of what I'm gonna
Now,
do.
I wouldn't do that with a counterfeit 50 or a counterfeit $100 bill or something. But a counterfeit toonie, buying a coffee at Tim Hortons. Yeah,
Yeah,
Tim
that's it.
Hortons.
I'll go to Tim's with them.
That's what we'll do. We'll
Okay.
gather up all of the counterfeit toonies we can find,
And go get a
and we'll
loaded
just go
bowl.
and buy stuff at Tim Hortons.
Yeah, I'm gonna get one of the loaded bowls, their new product. Let's move on.
Okay, I will. Yeah,
Okay.
I'll.
So from the fake toonies, do we want to get into a very hot sculpture in Calgary or an amazing Canada Day celebration in Vancouver?
Now let's get into the sculpture, and then let's land the episode home with two juggernauts.
Okay. All right. I love the headline of this article, and that's how we'll start. Calgary sculpture less likely to burn clothing and now accepts text messages. So that's like, what? What could this mean? But this all relates to a really cool looking public art installation. I guess the way I would describe it to someone is imagine, I don't know, an eight, that'll probably give the dimensions as we go, but imagine like a 10-foot tall, big ball of highly polished metal and reflective, almost mirror-like. But then you cut the ball down the center and kind of open it up and put a smaller ball underneath it, also of that same highly polished and highly reflective mirror-like metal texture. That's what this what the art installation looks like. But now the article will tell us about some problems they've been having with it. A notorious piece of public art, famous for burning a hole in a visitor's jacket, is back on public display in Calgary after some safety testing. This time, the city is confident it will have a tamer and a less heated experience. The $700,000 sculpture, called the Wishing Well, was first installed in front of the Genesis Center of Community Wellness in Northeast Calgary in 2012. On a sunny day in 2014, the polished stainless steel sculpture sculpture singed a visitor's jacket as they stood inside admiring the work. The city then removed the sculpture for safety reasons. After 8 years of sitting in dark storage away from public view, the sculpture is now back, but this time it's in Bridgeland. Ensuring a safe return for the sculpture wasn't easy, said Julie Yepishna Geller, the public art liaison for the city of Calgary. It took extensive testing in a controlled lab environment in consultation with artist group Living Lenses of San Francisco. Living Lenses really came to the table, she said. Their main goal was to have this piece back into the public realm, same as ours. The two polished stainless steel hemispheres were originally reflective inside and out, cradling an equally reflective sphere in between. So officials opted to dull the inside. To further reduce the risk of a heated encounter, the sculpture was placed at a 20-degree angle. And then there was the issue of location. The Wishing Well is an incredibly heavy piece, weighing 2,200 kilograms, so an indoor space is not possible. And that's where the Bridgeland location came in. Thanks to a private public partnership with developer JEMM Properties, the move and installation of the sculpture won't cost Calgarians any more tax dollars, and it's now in a public outdoor plaza with seating. And with its return, the Wishing Well has got some new tech. Visitors can send text messages to 1-587-327-9939 in the form of a greeting or a wish. The words from the messages get processed into Braille text dots that play music, sounds, or voices that can be heard by standing inside of the sculpture. Ward 9 counselor Guyan Carlo Cara said the sculpture's return is one example of how Calgary's public art program has matured in recent years. I'm going to end it with that. I think we covered the moment. I'm not as interested in how Calgary's public art has matured, but I'm very interested in public art exhibits going wrong and attacking people, and in this case, burning them. When you look at the image of the thing, I'm surprised that that wasn't a concern. Like anyone who's
it kind of surprised me too that it wasn't predicted that this thing could possibly get boiling hot in this.
Because it looks dangerous. It's almost like when you're a kid and you use the magnifying glass to project the sun's rays and fry ants.
Were you an ant fryer when you were a child?
Not so much ants, but I would burn like sticks and or toys, melt my toys, stuff like that. But
that's good.
Anyway, when I see this, it looks almost like some kind of weird futuristic kind of piece of weaponry that could direct the sun's rays to fly like or to fry an invading enemy ship or something of that nature. I want to go back. I didn't do this, but I'd like to go back and find the news stories as well about the back. I think it's set in 2014 when Buddy had his jacket singed.
That, imagine just on a gorgeous hot summer's day checking out an art installation downtown, and next thing you know, you spontaneously combust.
I wouldn't be surprised. But public art, it often can be dangerous. And here in Halifax, I can just think of like one city block where there are two very dangerous pieces of public art. One is a very famous thing in Halifax. People just call it the Wave, and it's a big
I've seen that.
I think it's made of concrete, and it just looks like a large wave. It's probably 15 feet high, and every day that you go, and it's right on our waterfront, and any day you go down there, there's a bunch of kids sitting up on the top of it or running up and down it, and it's painted, so it's kind of slippery, so kids will slide down it.
I'm just totally shocked that nobody has fallen to their death off of that thing.
I'm surprised no one's fallen to their death, but people have fallen to their broken wrists and ankles endlessly. I have a family member who is a surgeon, but during their practicum, like when a doctor's going through the steps, they worked in the emergency room in Halifax for a summer. And what they had told me was like every second day someone came in who was injured on the wave, came to the emergency room with like, either a concussion or a broken wrist or something like that.
Now, the thing that I find the most interesting about this art installation is that you can text it. And then it'll replay your messages, you know, as music or words or whatever. So how does it filter out dirty texts? Because my first instinct would be to text penis or boobies or, you know, eat my butt or whatever to the thing. And I'm just wondering, do they have an algorithm that filters out naughty texts, you know?
Oh, if they do, it's not good enough.
Yeah,
I
there's always
promise
ways
you.
to get it in there. Yeah,
You can
yeah.
just spell it wrong, or like spell things that when it tries to pronounce them, it sounds like a curse. It's just like with license plates, you know, they have like a list. We talked about this before, is there was
Yeah,
like,
the grabber guy.
yeah, there's a billion words or whatever they have at it that you can't have in a license plate, but you can trick it. Come on. I'd like to know. I'd like to get in touch with some kids and some teenagers in Calgary and see how they're messing around
Oh,
with
I'm
that.
sure they have a. I'm sure it's this is every Friday night for them. Yeah.
Well, anyway, we'll see what happens with it. If I ever go to Calgary, I'll try to get it to say something hilarious.
Or if we know anybody in Calgary who can text this thing a naughty word and then see and then have some kind of video evidence of what it produces.
So we talked about fake toonies. We talked about a very hot sculpture in Calgary. Now, do you want to get into a wild Canada Day in Vancouver?
Yeah. Let's quickly touch on this one because our last one is probably going to take up a bit of time.
Yeah, you're right. Magic mushrooms sh and strong edibles sold on Vancouver Beach on Canada Day. A downtown Vancouver beach became an open-air market for magic mushrooms and strong cannabis products on Canada Day. In an email to CTV, Constable Tanya Vicinton with the Vancouver Police Department said up to 100 tents were set up on Sunset Beach, and some vendors arrived as early as 4 a.m. Friday to secure a spot. Most vendors were selling magic mushrooms and cannabis products, including edible products containing up to 200 milligrams of THC, far stronger than the 10 milligram of THC permitted under Canadian law. So, 20 times. Anyway, the production and sale of magic mushrooms is illegal in Canada. In an email, the Vancouver Park Board describes the event as cannabis activation and said none of the vendors had permits, but did not. And said none of the vendors had permits, but did not provide any information regarding fines for bylaw infringements. The Vancouver Police Department said up to 1,500 people attended the event throughout the day, and there were no major issues. Constable Vicitin said no fines were issued by police because there wasn't anything criminal that happened.
Well, there was
I
though, wasn't
that's
there? They
yeah,
just
like.
they named off like eight things that they were doing illegally, and then they're like, yeah, but we didn't know issue any fines because they weren't doing anything wrong.
I don't get this event. So was the whole event just based on like we're having this crazy magic mushroom and super powerful weed day on Canada Day?
Yeah. I mean, chances are in these people's lives, every day is that day.
I don't get what the nature of this event is other than just like 1,400 people getting super high on a beach on Canada Day and seemingly advertising it in advance.
Yeah, and setting up booths and not having permits and selling, you know, illegal drugs.
If I was in Vancouver, I don't know. I kind of would want to be there for it, not to partake, but just to
No, but
kind
to
of
watch, yeah,
like I would
just
show,
to.
yeah, I would show up at like, you know, 11 a.m., let's say, when they've already had a couple hours to start. I'd have a coffee and I'd just sit on a bench with sunglasses on, being like, this is going to be a wicked day. Would you join
Yeah.
me?
Absolutely, I
Yeah.
would do that. That
All
would be a
right.
nice day for us.
Yeah. Well, let's get into the big ticket here.
All right.
So it's no secret that there are a lot of like snack foods that are commonplace around Canada, things we've known and loved our entire lives that for whatever reason are not available even in the United States. And if you're like anyone who's had friends visit from America or whatever, well, they've probably noticed some of these things. And it's actually, I've on more than one occasion have mailed coffee, mailed chocolate bars to friends in America because they can't get them down there. Certain ones. We'll get into them though. But I found a collection of seven common Canadian snacks that you can't get in the U.S. and a bit of the backstories on why. The research behind this was done by CBC. This is like based on a CBC list that this is several years old, but it's still very current. So I'm going to go through them one by one. And the first one is, it's not a surprise. This, I think, is probably the most common, is ketchup chips.
Yeah, that's a common one that that people do kind of know about. But I didn't realize it until I think in my mid-20s, I was working at a call center and they had someone from like Seattle or something was down training us in some program. And he just learned about ketchup chips. We were like, oh yeah, what kind of chips do you want? Like there's a vending machine there or something. And he's like, ketchup chips? Like, what's that? He's like, we don't have that at all. I was like, really? I assumed that was just at the time, I assumed it was just a common chip flavor all over the world, but
Yeah, and beyond, it's kind of like if you had to say like what the big four flavors were, it's kind of like, there's plain chips, there's ketchup chips, there's barbecue, and there's salt and vinegar. I would say those are the big four.
and sour cream and onion.
Yeah. But I would say ketchup is more common than sour cream and onion. Well, let's say the big five then. Those are the big
Let's
five
say the big
flavors.
five,
And
yeah.
they've been the big five flavors since we were kids. Here's what CBC had to say is this is inexplicably a Canadian classic. The ketchup chip has quite a complicated history, though. Invented in the 70s, the ketchup chip came to be when Hostess, which is now Lay's, rolled the dice on a line of fruit-flavored chips like orange and grape. Since you've never heard of grape chips before, you can imagine how that went. But their final experiment, a tomato-based flavor, has woven itself into our cultural fabric. Of course, they've tried to emulate this south of the border, but the attempts have either been limited in circulation or discontinued entirely. Clearly, this means American citizens do not have a distinguished enough palate for such a gourmet offering.
Yeah, and there's someone even in the chat right now that just said they'd never heard of ketchup chips.
Oh, that bizarre. But it's to describe the flavor, I say it's almost like they're similar to barbecue, but
Yeah,
different.
it's I have to be honest, it's my least favorite chip flavor.
I don't mind ketchup chips. I'll
I
take
don't
ketchup
mind it.
chips.
I eat them. Like, if I was like looking for a snack and all I have was ketchup chips, I'd eat the chips, but they're not. They're low on my list in terms of I've never purchased ketchup chips. I've eaten them, ones that other people have bought and had in their houses and out in bowls or whatever, but yeah, ketchup chips low on my list.
Now let's get into the second. This is another surprising one. It's a candied chocolate offering, commonly known as Smarties.
Yeah, this one blew me away.
Yeah, it seems like everyone in the world should have Smarties. And again, just like ketchup chips, since I was ki a kid, Smarties have just been, I wouldn't say iconic. They've just been like a given when you go to a candy
And it
aisle.
was all, yeah, Smarties and M&Ms, like it was, what's your favorite? What do you like better? Smarties or M&Ms, like it's just, and I just assumed my entire life up until tonight that Smarties were everywhere.
Oh, you didn't know. I did
I did
know
not
this.
know. No.
But Smarties, again, almost exactly like M&Ms. The big difference, I believe, is that Smarties, they're both like a little piece of chocolate that have a candied
Coding.
coating. I think Smarties have a more flavorful and crunchier candy coating. That's how I would describe the difference.
It's
But.
been probably 30 years since I've had a Smartie,
Oh,
so I
man.
can't really. I've had M&Ms periodically throughout my life, but Smarties, not so much.
Well, let me tell you that what CBC has to say about it. We'll never know if Americans eat the red ones last because Smarties are a Canuck-centered chocolate. It's not that Nestle won't sell Smarties in the U.S., it's that they can't. If you ask for Smarties in the States, you'll get a tablet candy more similar to what we know as Rockets. And that's because there's already a Smarties company in America, which is known for just that. Furthermore, with Nestle Canada being a subsidiary of the UK Nestle, there's a British version of Smarties that, while very similar, have their own distinct differences.
Mm-hmm.
So I guess there's already a company called Smarties in the US.
Yeah,
that are
just
more
a
sugar
closed
candy.
Door now for Smarties. Too bad.
Yeah, well, it's a shame. But I wouldn't necessarily miss those. But this next one gives me the warm and fuzzies that we have it in Canada. Probably not a big surprise, because I've often seen people say, in the United States, you can buy an automatic rifle, but you can't buy a Kinder Surprise.
Mm-hmm.
You know what? For Americans, sadly, don't get to enjoy Kinder Surprise. What this is a chocolate egg. And it's not just cheap, crappy chocolate. It's delicious,
it's really good chocolate,
delicious
yeah.
chocolate. And inside is a toy, like a small toy that generally you have to build. It'll come with instructions on how to build the little toy. So there'll be inside the chocolate egg, there's like a plastic egg, I guess. And inside that plastic egg, which is inside the chocolate egg, there'll be an instruction booklet and maybe six little pieces of plastic that you put together to make, you know, whatever the thing may be.
Yeah, whatever it is, a little boat or a little astronaut or something.
Whatever the nonsense is.
But it's funny now that I think about it, I've never really considered the choking option with Kinder Surprise, that somebody might just completely inhale the whole egg and accidentally swallow the small toy.
Yeah, and I'm sure, I don't know why they're not available in the US, but I'm guessing it's going to be the idea of marketing a product towards kids that is chocolate with tiny, tiny little pieces
little
of plastic.
Pieces of, yeah, yeah. No, I think they're wrapped up in a package or something.
But still, it's still all ending up in the same hand.
It's just, why even take the risk, you know? Yeah. Like, you know.
Let's read why they're not available there. I'm thinking that's what it's going to be.
That is what it is.
Yeah. Okay, so this isn't a Canadian original. The Kinder Surprise is an Italian creation by Ferrero. But this irresistible egg with a prize inside quickly became an honorary Canadian treat. So why isn't this snack surprise available in the States, a country that was founded on Cracker Jacks? Because that's banned. In the Federal Food, Drug, and Cosmetics Act, foods containing inedible items inside them, like toys, are outlawed due to the potential choking hazard it presents. And if you think this law is too old to possibly be in force, it was written in the 30s, U.S. border guards have been known to confiscate the Kinder Surprise.
Wow.
So here's the thing, though. In the United States, can you not get, like, toys and cereal or...
Well,
like
you don't even see that anymore anyway.
Yeah, that's true. Not
like when we were kids, cereal boxes always had, like, a surprise toy or some kind of a collectible item on the inside. And then you're pouring out the bowl, like, you know, normally you would get home, and before you even eat a bowl, you would dig your grubby little grass stained hands in there and find the toy first before you even poured any cereal out.
Yeah.
So then the box would get put back all puffed out because you had like opened it up and stuffed your hand in there.
Yeah.
But you don't see that anymore. Like you don't see when you look at the cereal aisle now in a grocery store, there's no toys.
No, I kind of remember it being phased though, because it got to a point where there wouldn't be toys, but like on the inside of the box would be a code that you can use or, you know, whatever. But it kind of a shame.
It was fun.
Let's get to the next one. This one, I also feel bad for Americans for. They do not have Joe Louis.
Yeah.
Which also tells me they don't have Super Joe Louis, which are like the double. And these, how would you describe this? I guess it's like a...
It's like a, well, it's a...
The cousin of a Twinkie.
Yeah, to me, it's almost like a piece of cake with kind of a white
how about
cream
this?
In the center. And
imagine if
covered in chocolate.
If a cake and a burger got together and had a baby, it would be a Joe Louis. So think of it as like two thin pieces of cake, which are like the bun. And then instead of a burger patty in the center, you just put some whipped cream. Then you put the two buns together. So you have like buns with whipped cream in the center, but you don't eat it yet. You dunk the whole thing in chocolate. So it's a chocolate covered burger made out of two cake buns with whipped cream instead of a patty. That and then a Super Joe Louis, if you've ever had one of those, it's the same idea, but then imagine instead of it being a cake having a baby with a burger, it's a cake having a baby with a Big Mac, because it has like the three, or it has two patties of whipped cream, I guess is the way I would put it. I love Joe Louis.
They're very good. I enjoy them too.
So let's find out why they can't get it in the US. Need a little more chocolate? Behold, a Canadian classic. Many regard the Joe Louis as Canada's hand cake answer to the American ding dong, but they've got it all wrong. The Joe Louis actually predates the 1960s invented ding dong. The Quebec-based Vachon Company, which invented the Joe Louis in 1932. The Joe Louis name has also caused a bit of a misunderstanding. The pronunciation of JOS as Joe, because it's spelled JOS, but it's called Joe Louis. The pronunciation of JOS as Joe has created the assumption that the snack was named after legendary American boxer Joe Louis, when actually it's named in honor of the Vachon sons, JOS, Joss, Jos, and Louis. And take a close look inside the snack. That's right. Joe Louis was red velvet before red velvet was cool. I don't know what they mean by that. Red
I
velvet
think
cake is like.
the cake is kind of a red velvety kind of cake. It's not like
Okay.
a standard dark brown. It's
Yeah.
a more of a reddish color.
I wouldn't have expected that these have been around since the 30s, but.
No. And I wasn't even aware that that was a strictly Canadian company.
Yeah, but now that I think of it, Vachon, that's definitely French, but I would have assumed it was from France or something, but
Yeah, pastry, you know.
yeah, well, I'm glad we got it in Canada.
No, I feel special.
Now, this next one is they're all the kind of surprising me, but this
This
next
one,
one,
yeah, this one is the biggest shocker, I
the
think.
entire world needs to have this, and that is
Yeah.
a Coffee Crisp chocolate bar.
Yeah, this one truly made me fall over when I
They're missing out,
realized that
right?
it's Canadian. It's a Canadian thing.
Again, like we said with ketchup chips being one of the big five chips. No, let's not think of all the modern candy, like the modern chocolate bars, but if you think of chocolate bars that have been around since we were kids, if I had to think of like the big five, I'd be thinking like, I don't know, Kit Kat,
Snickers, Kit Kat, Coffee Crisp,
Mars, Aero.
Mars, you know. Well, I'm not even going to utter the name of Reese,
Yeah.
but
So let's try it again. Kit Kat, Aero bars,
Snickers.
Snickers bars, Coffee Crisp. And then there's kind of
Oh,
like,
Henry.
but even that is kind of like, I call that like a second generation bar because I kind of remember when they came out.
Well, Coffee Crisp is one of my go-to bars. Like
It's, yeah,
that's one of my favorite bars.
it's always been one of my favorites. And the name is weird because it doesn't really taste like coffee. I would
It's
just,
got kind of a coffee taste to it, I find.
yeah,
I can agree with the name.
I've been drinking or eating Coffee Crisp bars since I was, 7 years old. Certainly wasn't drinking coffee then. Let's see why it's not available beyond Canada. So this is another concept you'd swear was a south of the border invention, a coffee flavored chocolate bar. But it's actually a Canadian variation on a British treat. Originating from Roundtree's Wafer Crisp, which itself has also morphed into the Kit Kat, it was a Canadian variation that was popular enough to last when Nestlé took over the company. The bar has been courted by Americans. An online petition took 6 years to bring the crisp to the US, though the marketing and distribution was discontinued in 2009. So it's only Canadians that like their coffee crisp. I never thought of that as the coffee crisp certainly is like a distant, maybe not even distant, but just a cousin of the Kit Kat bar. Similar.
Yeah, although I don't really, I would never compare the two.
The next one I don't really care too much about. A Nestle product, the Big Turk bar, which is a
Yeah, this
Turkish
is a
delight.
bar that I'm always shocked it's even sold. Like
Yeah.
how many people are buying the Big Turk?
That is a, I call that like an old person bar. I can only imagine like my grandfather
I've
getting
never
one or something.
seen another human being in my life eat a Big Turk ever.
Okay. Well, let's find out why they're not available in the U.S. Speaking of Nestle, they have another bar whose taste is even more unique. The Big Turk is a retro-looking Canadian original, a thin layer of chocolate covering pink Turkish delight, also known as lokum. If you're wondering what Turkish delight even is, it's a sugary, starchy mixture that creates a hard, gel-like treat. You've had it at your grandmother's, probably. It was never sold in America. The Big Turk also holds a statistic over its Canadian counterparts. The 60-gram bar only contains 3.5 grams of fat. I didn't know that.
I
But
didn't know that either.
it's, I would just call it like a chewy mess.
I just call it a mistake.
You're not missing anything, Americans.
Yeah, don't sign any petitions for the Big Turk.
Next, feel bad for them. They cannot get pink cream soda, which is, isn't that like when you say pink cream soda, isn't all of our cream soda pink?
I think cream soda traditionally is clear, isn't it?
I don't know. When I think of cream soda, I'm always thinking of like the pink
Me too. That's
Crush
where I,
brand.
yeah, that's where my mind goes immediately. But if it's not pink, what is it?
If you're getting a little thirsty, prepare to drink in this odd Canadian conspiracy. Now, yes, cream soda is sold all over the world, but what color is it? If you said reddish pink, then you're Canadian. For some yet unanswered reason, cream soda only seems to be sold this color in Canada. Crush, one of the top cream soda producers, has a wholly American history. Founded in California in 1916, after creating their most famous Orange Crush soda, which led them to a host of other flavors. However, it's only in Canada that their pink cream soda is sold, with zero public explanation of this national phenomenon. That is bizarre, isn't it?
Yeah. It's weird.
When I think of cream soda, and it's not just Crush, when you buy like a big 2 liter of like no name cream soda, wouldn't it be like that reddish pinkish color?
Well, someone in the chat said the A&W one is clear.
I'm
So.
gonna have to look next time at the grocery store and see how the majority of them are sold. The next
Yeah.
one isn't so much a retail product, it's just kind of a snack that I think people just bake them. I'm not too fond of Nanaimo bars.
Oh no, they're delicious.
How would you describe a Nanaimo bar to someone who has never experienced one?
Oh, like it's like a layer of chocolate. Like there's like a, it's almost like a graham, like a chocolate graham kind of base with like
Like a creamy
a
kind of second
cream in the
layer.
center and then like chocolate on top. But like there's something about it. It's like a, such a refreshing taste. Like I'm not sure what is in it, but
And not only the
it's got this
taste,
cooling kind of taste to it. Like it's yeah.
they're generally sold chilled, and it's not only the taste, it's the texture that's important too. I think when you bite it in, when you bite into a Nanaimo bar, if you're going from the top down, it's more like a very sweet chocolate followed by a soft creamy kind of thing, and then you get to the bottom, which is kind of like a crispier sort of thing. It's a cool kind of layer to it, but let's read about it. While many other snacks on this list have roots elsewhere, the Nanaimo bar is a Canadian treat born and bred. Though its origins are not quite clear, the classic recipe, which is a layered sandwich of waffle crumb, then custard, topped with melted chocolate squares, first appeared in BC in the 1950s, though the city of Nanaimo has claimed it as its own. Oh, though the city of Nanaimo has claimed it as its own. There have been some variations. People called it the New York Bar or the London Fog, but Nanaimo has held strong in its namesake. The city's website has the quintessential award-winning recipe and offers a self-guided tour where you can taste the many variations and celebrate the chocolatey history of Canada. I think that's cool.
Yeah, I mean that one did not surprise me at all.
Yeah, it's just unlike the other things on the list, though, it's not a retail product. Although,
No,
again,
it's just more of a thing that people make and every store has its own different version of it.
yeah, you go to a coffee shop. I don't think Tim Hortons sell it, but a lot of coffee shops would have, you could buy an oat cake or whatever, or a Nanaimo bar or a chocolate chip cookie. They're just so common here.
Yeah.
If
And
any,
delicious.
yeah, if any listeners from outside of Canada are interested in any of these products, I suggest you contact a Canadian friend. I would say if you're going to try any one of these, the coffee crisp is kind of the one
Oh
I'd sign
yeah,
up for.
that's the one that again was a shocker to me that it didn't exist outside of here.
And if people really want one and they can't find a Canadian send it to them, contact me and I'll try to make it happen. All right, Aaron. Well, we've had a busy night, but I think we survived it.
Yeah, we made it through, and it was a jam-packed episode.
Do you feel a little better about being a Canadian, given the fact that we have access to some of those delicious treats?
I'm super craving a coffee crisp right now.
What I want to
Like,
do is I want to go to Vancouver, get a bunch of magic mushrooms
Eddie Coffee Crisp?
at the thing that will at the
The
weird
Magic
sculpture.
Mushroom Market,
Yeah,
and
get
then
them at
get
the Magic
burnt.
Mushroom Market. Go to get the coffee crisps. Head over to Calgary. Sit and look at and sit and mess with
And
the
text
Braille.
penis to the art installation.
Yeah, how's that sound? We'll buy the whole
Sounds
thing
like we
with
got
fake
our
toonies.
whole sounds like yeah, it sounds like I got our whole vacation planned out, you and I.
Awesome. All right. Well, let's get plane airfare arranged. Hopefully, we can pay in toonies as well for the plane tickets, but we'll figure that out. Anyway, let's wrap this up, buddy.
All right.
Until next
Well,
time, Aaron.
until next time, Jordan.
How do you like your coffee?
Crisp.
Want to thank you for joining Aaron and I for our Keep Canada Weird discussion. But before we part, I want to give some thanks. First, a big thanks to Aaron for sharing another evening with me and with you, the listeners of Nighttime. A big thanks to the internet's favorite cult leader, Unicole, who supplied the intro and outro voiceovers. But the most important thanks goes to every one of you listening, as without your interest and your support, Nighttime would be as pointless as it would be impossible. But with that said, keeping the show alive is and has always been an uphill battle. So if you want to help take a bit of weight off the show's back, make sure you listen on the premium feed. And not only does the premium feed make the show possible, it'll give you more of each topic than you'll find here on the free feed, as I'm adding exclusive content regularly and maintain a full collection of back episodes only on the premium feed. So for about the price of a cup of coffee, keep the show alive at patreon.com/nighttimepodcasts. Now let me thank the newest subscribers to the premium feed, Kelly, Rachel, and Don. Thank you for your generous support. And for anyone else out there who'd like to support the show but can't do it financially, you can give me a big hand by simply sharing this episode on social media and letting some like-minded friends know what we're doing here. If you have any story ideas, if you want to give feedback on the show, or if you'd like to contribute a voice memo for Aaron and I to respond to in an upcoming episode, you can do all that and more at nighttimepodcast.com/contact. We both hope to hear from you. But until then, take care of each other. Hug your loved ones tight, and let me know if you see anything weird.
The Nighttime Podcast is written, hosted, and produced by Jordan Bonaparte. Copyright Jordan Bonaparte.
Coffee Crisp, you're more than a candy bar. You're layers of wafers so crisp, so light, with a chocolatey coating that tastes just right. A center of coffee cream that's so bubbly it's light as a dream. Then layers upon layers are all stacked, and in a chocolatey coating you're wrapped. Coffee Crisp, you're more than a candy bar. You're a nice, light snack. That's what you are.
When you eat your Smarties, do you eat the red ones last? Do you eat them by the bowlful? Do you find them under glass? Do you eat them by the bundle? Or eat them though we're fast? When you eat your Smarties, do you save the best for last? When you eat your Smarties, do you eat the red ones last? Do you dive right in the middle? Do you catch them on a pass? Do you eat them on your ice cream? Smarties are a blast! When you eat your Smarties, do you eat the red ones last? When you eat your Smarties, do you eat the red ones last?
Canada may be known for its landscapes and friendly people, but beneath the surface lies a darker side of crime, history, and the paranormal. Since 2017, the award-winning Dark Poutine podcast has explored the shadowy corners of the Great White North and beyond, delivering chilling tales from a uniquely Canadian perspective. Hosted by Mike Brown and Matthew Stockton, with over 300 episodes and fresh releases every Monday, Dark Poutine is your weekly ticket to the creepier side of Canada. Listen to Dark Poutine on Apple, Spotify, Amazon Music, or wherever you get your podcasts.